Hello, everybody, and welcome to our first introductory podcast for mental illness in pop culture. In this introductory podcast, we just want to talk a little bit about who we are and what we're hoping to accomplish with this podcast. Who would like to start? Do you want to pull up?
Well, my name is Toni. I am a first semester graduate student studying clinical mental health. And I first heard about a podcast on a TV show, actually. It was One Tree Hill. And she had like this really awesome podcast, but then it kind of like, it took a dark turn because she kind of ended up with a stalker. But it was more so video webcamming and instead of just audio, which is, this is a lot better in my opinion. But I was interested in this course. The moment I got the email, I was like, yes, I love pop culture references.
Yeah.
Relating it to like your general area of study. So that's why I'm here.
So my name is Anna. I am in my last semester of the counseling program at NIU. I was interested in this course because I think it's really important to talk about some of the issues that we have in mental health counseling and how the media portrays it. I think it's a very interesting topic and one that is so widespread in the media that it influences and reaches a lot of people. So yeah, that's why I'm interested and that's why I'm here.
I'm Adam Gregory. I'm working on my PhD here at NIU. I just got started. I'd originally gotten the email about the idea of this course, and I'm a huge film buff. Back in Ohio, where I grew up, I was a member of the Cleveland Film Festival, and I have big parties for like the Academy Awards each year, and I've always been a huge film buff. And I tried to pitch actually a course like this, the idea of a course like this, in my master's program back at Youngstown State. And they incorporated a little bit in when it came to DSM and like our course for diagnosis and watching a film and diagnosing in the film and things like that, but didn't necessarily have a whole need for a course at that time. So when I got this email, I jumped on it right away and needed to be a part of it. And I've been listening to podcasts now for a few years because I drive a lot, or at least I did prior to moving here. So I would drive over an hour to and from work every day. So it was a lot of podcasts in the car.
Yeah, I just got a new car within the past week for the first time in 11 years. And one of my main criteria was that my new car have Bluetooth built into it so I could just listen to podcasts right through my car speakers. My name is Dr. Scott Wickman. And I also am really interested in this topic of mental health issues and how professional helping is portrayed in pop culture and in popular media. I want to give a couple shout outs. The first is to our office manager, Debbie Thompson, who came up with the idea for having a fun class called Mental Illness in Pop Culture. So I want to thank her for that. In kind of getting up the courage to take this from just being us sitting around having discussions and have that be a podcast, I want to say I was inspired by the podcast Thinking Sideways. So give a shout out to Joe, Steve, and Devin on that show, where they just kind of get together and talk about stuff and record it. And it's interesting stuff, and how they interact is interesting. And I thought we can probably capture what we talk about in the same way.
For sure.
Now, I have picked out, right now I have, about 9 films picked out. And each week we will focus on a different film. One, some pop culture film, you know, that was released in theaters and everything like that. And that also has a character who is dealing with mental health issues, one or more characters. Then, and it's bonus if there also is a portrayal of a professional helper in the film. And it's kind of based, my idea for this type of discussion and analysis is based on the idea that pop culture and popular media, social media, is both influenced by and influences public perception. And so in this way, we have a chance to look at to what extent do the films that we watch, to what extent do they reflect public perception of mental illness? And also, how do these films influence? And in the selection process for these the films that we're going to watch, and from the top of my head, this is not an exclusive list, but we're looking at things like Good Will Hunting, Ordinary People, Antoine Fisher, A Beautiful Mind, The Devil and Daniel Johnston, Stevie, Perks of Being a Wallflower, Girl Interrupted, Silver Linings Playbook. I might have left something out.
That's nice.
But that's okay. And then one film maybe to be named later, or we'll see how yeah. this picks up.
Yeah, I think it'd be great to definitely incorporate one, if possible, that is like brand new, that is just coming out before we find like all the literature on it and see what other people are yeah. saying, to just create our own unique ideas and what we came up with without, you know, looking at what other people have published or already said. Because I always find that fascinating, yeah. you know.
And so, in my mind at least, all of these films are fairly accurate portrayals of mental illness in real life, more or less. Two of them are documentaries. And what I really wanted to avoid was anything that is sensationalistic, like that takes, you know, like, for example, the concept of dissociative identity disorder, which is also known as multiple personality disorder. Extremely uncommon and, in fact, controversial as to whether or not it really exists. You can see right behind you, I've got a book called Sybil Exposed that totally blows apart the whole idea that Sybil had.
Actually,
that.
Just watched a movie over the weekend randomly. It was called Six Souls, which it wasn't, it was not exactly what I thought it was going to be, but the main character, who's played by Julianne Moore, is a psychologist who is just does not believe it whatsoever.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, it was kind of funny that we were starting this and this is what the movie happened to be.
Yeah, I read a book that was, I don't remember the name of it, but it was about a woman with DID, and it was from first person, and or actually like first, second, and
oh,
third
yeah,
person.
Yeah, right.
It would be like her normal self, and then it would be her, like, studious, like, really, like, yes, man self. And then the other one is was, like, the troublemaker self. And it was, it's fiction, so it was a little overdramatic, but I liked it. It was kind
of
funny.
It reminds me of the book, I believe it's called The Faces of Eve.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Three Faces of Eve.
Three Faces of Eve.
Yeah.
Found very, very interesting. It's one of the things that got me. We read it in class in AP Psychology when I was in high school. And it's one of the things that really interested me among the entire course in pursuing this field, simply because it was an interesting portrayal. I'm not sure how accurate, you know, it was based on cases that we see in real life, but simply being able to connect with that person and understand their experience is one of the reasons why I wanted to be a counselor.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's interesting because Eve White, I don't know if that's what her real name was, but the client, she has now come out and said that she was pressured by her psychiatrist or professional helper to act as if she had those three different personalities, but she's recanted that since then.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, when I think about what inspired me to go into this, also sort of something that was on the verge of semi-pop psychology. When I was in high school, I was really interested in the books of Eric Byrne and Transactional Analysis.
Ooh,
yeah. So we get like Games People Play and What Do You Say After Hello? And those were hugely influential in my coming into this field. I no longer subscribe to the underlying beliefs of that, but that's what kind of got me in the door.
Hmm.
During my practicum and internship experience, I actually really followed that theory for my counseling work. Since then, of course, my theory and approach evolved.
Sure.
You know, from then, but I really connected with that book. And, I appreciate the humor and the engaging way that Eric Byrne writes, because it's accessible to the layman, you know, the person who may not be in the field but still interested.
Hmm.
I also appreciated the humor and just the underlying philosophy or assumptions, which, you know, so Eric Byrne says that we act in certain dysfunctional ways because there's a payoff for us in doing it. And just having that realization that people are doing one thing overtly, but there's something
underlying,
thank you, mm-hmm. that's actually going on. That's like the secret hidden agenda that they're having.
Sure. That's my favorite part, is figuring out, like, because I'm always like, I was originally like dead set on like psychology and clinical psychology, and then I was just like, oh, well, there's other avenues, and you still get to talk with people, but you don't have to like overanalyze people. And I feel like coming into counseling is like, I've seen like how psychology, like straight and arrow, you know, it's like concepts, theories, like Freud, you know.
Yeah.
And then I got over on this path, and I'm just like, oh, it's more discussions and talking and like figuring out like together like how to help someone.
Right, a real collaborative approach. And it's really a hallmark of what distinguishes counseling as a professional identity.
Mm-hmm. And we really saw that in the movie.
In Good Will Hunting. Yeah,
It was the only approach in the movie that was able to get through to the main character, and I think I really connect with that approach, because you know, for counseling, one of the most important things is building a relationship with your client, and sometimes it's not that easy when there's so much resistance, kind of like with Will's character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Will and. I don't remember how many, like, doctors he went through.
I think like five.
Yeah.
Before.
Several, for sure. Yeah.
And then got to one where he, like, couldn't BS that person. But I did have a question, because I know it's fictionalized.
Yeah.
But the moment he like choked him, wow. I was like, that.
Well,
my 5 weeks in ethics has taught me.
Scott has been talking about this since Good Will Hunting was mentioned on the list.
Yes. And I feel like we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, because right now we're doing our introductory podcast. And then once we're done with our introduction, then we'll do our Good Will Hunting.
Great.
Gotcha.
Podcast.
We'll
come back to this. We will. So we're just doing a little foreshadowing now. All right, I want to close some loops. So I want to say a few more things just about myself and my background and my interest in this topic. I've always been really interested in popular culture and music and films. And I had a brief and not that successful stab at some performing myself when I was an undergraduate here at Northern Illinois University, and also during my master's program. And I'm also aware that in the postmodern assumptions related to counseling, One of the hallmarks of a postmodern fourth force approach is the incorporation of popular culture into work that we do with clients and with students. And it seems like it just makes it so much more realistic. And when I have taught this topic the past couple years as a full class, and I've had a lot of psychology undergraduates in there, and they've said, we love this because we can really see what all of these diagnoses and what this type of work looks like. For example, just something that we'll probably touch on when we talk about Robin Williams' portrayal of Sean McGuire as a counselor. Boy, he was really big on that authenticity, mm-hmm. and he was really big on therapeutic use of self.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's easy, it's nice when you can see that as opposed to speaking abstractly about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I tend to think I share a little more than what a typical counselor would share. But I also just, I personally couldn't put myself in that situation of seeing a counselor as this like blank slate and like we're supposed right. to not share anything of us. That way they don't form an opinion or
and they can being project onto us yeah. and transfer.
But then how do we want them to be able to share all these really personal, intimate things that we're about to ask? Or I don't know. It's just something that I tend to share a little bit more. And I think it works with the people I've worked with so far. But, you know, I'm relatively newer to the field, so it'd be interesting to kind of get that opinion of people yeah. who have worked in the field for years or decades.
So I want to say, I had meant to say it earlier, but just a little more about my background.
Yeah, sorry.
So I worked for about 4 years. I worked as a community support counselor in Southern Illinois while I was in my doctoral program. Following that, I worked for a couple of years as a K-12 school counselor in Central Illinois. Then I came here and began my career as a counselor educator. I'm in my 17th year as a professor here at Northern. And a couple positions I've had during that time. I've had leadership positions as president of the Illinois School Counselor Association, Illinois Counseling Association, North Central Association of Counselor Education Supervision, Coalition of Illinois Counseling Organizations, and currently I am president of the Illinois Association for Spiritual, Ethical, and Religious Values in Counseling. In addition to that, I do like films a lot, and through a series of events, I got to know a director named Gorman Bachard. I actually first became aware of him through a book that he had written in the 1990s in which the main character was the daughter of God who had come back to Earth, and she was a huge fan of my favorite band, The Replacements. And so that's where I first heard of Gorman, and then he did a documentary about The Replacements, and I got involved with that as an executive producer. And I'm also on, I interview Gorman as one of the features on the bonus features on the DVD. And so then through that relationship, I've also gotten involved with him with a few more films, Every Everything, The Life and Times of Grant Hart, A Dog Named Gucci, which is about animal rights and legalization to prevent cruelty to animals. Most recently, a documentary about an up-and-coming alt-country performer, Lydia Loveless. So the film is called Who's Lydia Loveless? And Lydia herself, within that documentary, talks about how she has experienced bipolar disorder and how that's affected her performing and songwriting and life. And it's really interesting. And then the last film that I'm just starting to get involved with is called Normal Valid Lives. And I don't know a lot about it, but I think it has to do with how community members in a small town in Minnesota came together to rally around LGBT adolescents after they were receiving some kind of harassment and bullying. So that's a little bit about how I got interested in this topic, and I feel like this sort of brings all of that together.
Yeah, you have a lot of experience.
Yeah.
I like that we're all into the reading, or like film buffs. I wouldn't consider myself a film buff. I really, really like movies, but I haven't. I think I've seen like 4 out of the movies.
Oh, okay.
Listed.
Yeah.
I do specifically remember watching A Beautiful Mind in high school in my AP Psych class, and it was the best thing I've ever. I was in class just, oh my God, this is amazing. Because we would watch, you know, Mean Girls.
Oh.
And it was really funny to, you know, write down what issues like each character had, but it wasn't realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not gonna get hit by a school bus and then be at a dance like 2 hours later. So I really liked that my teacher incorporated all types of movies. Like, mm-hmm. There were A Beautiful Mind that was like a really good movie, and then there was Mean Girls that was funny. And we also did something really interesting where we had to watch a documentary about psychologists analyzing Batman.
Interesting.
And the characters, and that was what really got me into like pop culture and mental health and counseling and psych. I think I got the best grade in the whole paper because I couldn't stop myself from writing, and it was just like, I love superheroes, so I really like to, well, you know, yeah. I just really loved it, so I really am glad that we're all on the same movie book.
And it makes me think also when we think of some of the most popular characters, cartoon characters and superheroes that we're all aware of, and of course, we don't diagnose anybody without actually meeting them, but ideas come to mind when you think about somebody like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Probably got a little depression going on there.
Dysthymia.
A little dysthymia. And then we've got Tigger. How about a little ADD?
There are so many. I guess my class did that a lot. We would like come in and like everybody would have a different cartoon that they watched or something, and they'd come in like, so yeah, I was watching this last night and I noticed that this character has little hints of this. And then my teacher would have to tell us like, well, you know, don't diagnose anyone yet. You're just, you know, you haven't, they're
right,
not real people. You can't diagnose anybody. We kind of went overboard. So my teacher had to sit us down and have that, you don't have a degree yet.
Yeah.
You don't have any licensure. You can't really diagnose anything.
And I think it relates to, you know, people just watching these movies and these cartoons who may not have a background in psychology or counseling, who may be doing the same thing. And I think a lot of the, you know, perceptions or, you know, as we were talking about, the influences that they may get from popular media, because it is fun sometimes, you know, to discuss characters, to connect them to our lives, or to, what is it called, like, connect with them personally. And so I think that not only us who are in this field, but also people at home may be doing the same thing. And
it's a little safer. You know,
oh,
you're misdiagnosing a character is a lot better than misdiagnosing a client.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wonder, so before we started recording, we had talked amongst ourselves about what we are wanting to accomplish with this podcast. And I wonder if we could try to recreate some of that dialogue.
I would like other people to be like, I was talking about how if you're watching a movie and you notice these things we were just talking about, or you're watching a TV show or anything that has to do with the media and you notice a character who portrays certain possible mental illnesses, or you see a counseling session on a TV show, and like, I was hoping that this podcast could be something that people could listen to so they can also, you know, like have some dialogue with other people or get the word out that there's a podcast about pop culture and mental illness, because it's really interesting to us, so I'm pretty sure it's really interesting to other people. And for those that don't really have anybody to talk to about it, because not everybody has the same interest, this is like the perfect outlet for them.
Yeah, definitely spreading awareness. And just, like you said, raising conversations, you know. It's something that is present in the media, in our lives, and I think having more conversations about topics that are relevant and stuff is really good.
Mm-hmm. Like, kind of taking away some of the, still the stigma, unfortunately, mm-hmm. around mental health, and also kind of what a counselor is.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, psychotherapy is still seen in a lot of film and television as this little side character person who is probably sleeping with their client, or, you know, just all the negative stuff. There's so many different things. I could go on for days, you know.
Sometimes
but
negative portrayal. Like,
absolutely.
I don't want to open up to you. Why are you in my head, kind of thing.
Or even, I'm sure we'll talk about it, like, you know, we watch a 2-hour film and it's like, oh, look at all these wonderful breakthroughs and now you're fixed and go on with your life.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah,
it doesn't
happen like that sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That prompts a lot of thoughts. And it also relates again to selection.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, one of my side hobbies is I collect portrayals of school counselors and helpers in general, but I really focused on school counselors as portrayed in TV shows, movies, and commercials. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, they are sexually active
mm-hmm.
with parents and students. You know, wild things. Matt Dillon, the hot school counselor, and all of a sudden he's having sex with all the senior girls there. Prince of Tides, same thing. And that just gets overlooked, you know, the sex with clients, as if that's okay. And the other thing, in terms of like caricature of professional helper, so things like, what about Bob? You know, so Richard Dreyfuss plays this sort of two-dimensional neo-Freudian psychiatrist. Or analyze this, analyze that, same thing. And so, you know, and maybe if we decide to turn this podcast into something that goes on for years or multiple semesters, maybe we'll look at some bad ones. But for us, I wanted us to try to steer away from those,
mm-hmm.
even though we can bring them up in our conversation.
Yeah. And even the good ones, even the ones that are fantastic, still have some stereotyping and stuff that can be.
Well, yeah. So one that we are including is one that, this is just a little preview, one that you and I strongly disagree about,
mm-hmm.
and that is Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
In fact, I was publicly criticized by Lydia Lovelace, who I mentioned earlier, because I posted on Gorman's Facebook page how I thought that Silver Linings Playbook was the worst movie of all time. And she said, what is there not to like about a movie that perfectly accurately portrays what it's like to have bipolar disorder?
And I just, you know, we'll have to talk about it when the movie comes up, but you made me also think of a different side of it, won't we? Because I hadn't thought about it from the point of view that you brought up. And while I do still like my point of view, because we all love our own the best, right?
Yeah.
But it really made me have to think about it.
Well,
and your point of view is what? That I did think it was kind of beautiful that it still did have kind of a happy ending, that, you know, it, a diagnosis of a mental disorder isn't an end-all tell-all to somebody's life, and that there are so many other facets of everyone's life, that it doesn't have to be, you know, it is a devastating thing to hear, but it's not the only thing in someone's life. So
yeah,
I enjoyed that. Exactly.
It actually reminds me a little bit of my training that I received some messages as I was in training as a counselor that if somebody has a severe mental illness, then the work that you do with them is medication management and symptom reduction, and that's really all you focus on. But I found in my actual work that somebody who has a diagnosis of a mental illness benefits just as much as everybody else from regular personal counseling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, we might be winding down for our introductory podcast segment. Anything else that you want to say before we conclude this first episode?
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excited.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
In addendum to our introductory episode, forgot to mention, I think that a concern and a limitation of our current film selection is lack of diversity among the main characters. We're going to start with Good Will Hunting. We've got South Boston culture, which is a subcategory of white culture. We've got Stevie. We definitely get rural, low SES, Southern Illinois culture. Antoine Fisher, we get the military. We get the military, and we also get some racial issues, including internalized racism. But what we mainly have is a lot of white middle class in these films.
And when we were talking about it a few weeks ago, you know, I tried afterward to think of, like, what other movies would I want to include to have a more diverse cast or a more diverse population. And I just didn't, you know, I started thinking about also incorporating the idea that, like, you know, there weren't a lot of people of color nominated for Oscars the last several years. Mm-hmm. And people mm-hmm. were like, is it that they're not, like, being offered good parts because we want to have a niche in the film? So to have mental health discussed in a film, or to have something where they're already having this niche of mental health, like, let's not add in a particular subcategory of race or ethnicity, because then that just takes it down further and further. And maybe there just isn't a lot of diversity when it comes to films focused on mental health, period.
I think it's more so that there's still so many stigmas in the sub-communities and the sub-categories that no one's really thinking about broadening the horizon, because when it comes to those who seek counseling, it's more so, you know, like, hetero individuals, middle to higher SES, because they have money to pay for the insurance, and it's not so much frowned upon, you know, to go to counseling in those communities and stuff. And a lot of people of color don't seek counseling because they feel like they can fix it on their own. And that's why I noticed there aren't that many films that incorporate religion and spirituality either, because a lot of people believe that you can just, like, pray and that'll fix all your mental problems. Mm-hmm. Like, I have these conversations with people all the time. It's like, oh, you can just go to church. Sometimes that works, but if you're not a really religious or spiritual person, then what do you have if you don't have any representation of, like, going to counseling? So I think it's just
imitating life.
I think yeah. that's a great thing to portray in movies, is difficulties in so many of these movies do portray, like, for, you know, middle class white individuals, perhaps the ease of you know, obtaining counseling or getting services, but I think it would be really nice to see a film done of the issues of other cultures or other, like, diverse populations trying to get counseling, to raise that awareness and to help promote services for other populations. I think that's really needed. But the other thing that we have to take into account is that movie makers trying to make money.
Money.
So, you know.
And I think that's where a lot of the sensationalistic and exploitive portrayals of mental illness come. And I also, So I also was trying to avoid films in which mental illness was correlated with violence. Mm-hmm. Beyond what we see in like a Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
So because statistically, persons with mental illness are far less likely to commit violent acts than the general population.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in portrayals in movies and TVs, people with mental illness are so much more likely, and that's what the stereotype is.
Well, even in politics now, they want to blame it on everything.
Oh, yes.
Mental illness is the reason we have mass shootings. Like, ugh.
Right.
He was mentally unstable.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Because then that makes people think that if you have it, that makes people afraid to even, like, explore their, like, mentality. And if they have an issue, they don't want to talk about it because they don't want to be labeled as, like, oh,
absolutely,
you have issues and you're going to, like, need to be under supervision because you might, you know, harm yourself or others. I, from, you know, speaking with other people that I know have mental illness or have struggled with their, like, you know, overflow of emotions, they're more so wanting to be by themselves in a room for, like, X amount of days. And it's like, I think the media does a, sometimes they do really great portrayals, but I also think that a lot of the good, like the better portrayals might be just not in like what Hollywood sees as a shining movie.
Yeah.
A lot of independent movies are a lot.
Oh,
yeah.
That's true.
If you showed what a typical counseling session looked like, people wouldn't watch the movie. It's a lot of processing.
Yeah.
It's like watching one of those videos that you have to watch in class, and it's not really what people like fantasize and dramatize.
Yeah.
So
right.
You know,
right.
Media has to like make it all much.
Are
like,
you saying you don't love the Corey videos?
I do.
Even counseling videos, I think, is difficult to find because one, either you take a real client and they're literally on screen, which you know may censor their experience, or you have an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know,
yeah.
Even though they're a really good actor, may not be true emotions. So.
I show a lot of counseling videos in my classes, as
mm-hmm.
you're aware. I do find that with an actor, you just can't get the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, generally the actor has not taken skills and strategies class. They don't really understand what counseling is. They're overly resistant, more so than an actual person generally that we're working with. So I find those don't turn out too well. You know, so going back to the diversity issue, here's just an example. So I think about a year and a half ago, an original movie came out on HBO. I'm a fan of HBO. And it was a one-man show featuring an African-American character who is alone in his house, and he's waiting for his mom to get home. And he's talking to himself, and you can see that he is dealing with mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he killed his mom, and her body is, like, in the bedroom.
Okay.
By the way, if you're listening to this podcast, you're going to get spoilers.
I was going to say, I know, like, I have HBO, I was like, going to go home and look at this, but now...
I might still watch it.
Yeah. But, and so I thought, no, I don't want to promote those stereotypes.
Negative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought there was a really good portrayal. I'm going from memory. I haven't seen this movie for a long time. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. One of the main characters is Native American.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember how much screen time he gets in the film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but in the book One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, he's actually the main character. And he's the narrator. And because we're able to go inside of his mind, we are able to experience mental illness. For example, he has weird experiences related to time, like clocks will go really fast and then slow down, things like that.
I was unaware of that.
Yeah.
Now I need to go on.
So the book by Ken Kesey is really excellent. It's different than the movie, and it's equally brilliant to the movie. Yeah.
One thing though that I think we do have diversity in is the time period that the movie was made, so, or is about.
Yeah.
So I think that's very interesting to see a portrayal of mental health counseling or this profession throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have some films that were actually filmed, you know, 20 years ago.
Yes.
So, and it's very interesting how similar and how different and contrasting it is to our experience as mental health professionals today.
There's also a diversity in the illness in itself. It's not like every character is struggling with depression.
Right.
It's not, and there are issues that some of these characters deal with that aren't really talked about as much. It's not just the stereotypical DID or schizophrenia. It's more so abandonment issues, and that's really
yes.
nice to see how abandonment really affects you throughout your life and how certain, you know, issues carry into your adult life and how they affect you. I know in counseling we're all about the here and now, and it's really interesting to see how, like, even though we're focused on the here and now, there's, you know, past, you know, occurrences that have happened in your life that can affect you're here now. So I like that there's diversity in that aspect of not everybody has like depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder.
Right. Yeah, earlier we were talking about Eric Byrne, who's a neo-Freudian. And so from a psychodynamic perspective, it's early childhood experiences influence our way of being for the whole rest of our lives. And then several of the characters in these films have issues related to attachment. The first two films are going to be Good Will Hunting and Ordinary People. And a couple reasons why I like starting out with those two is because I think that the professional helpers, the counselors, I think are really well portrayed and are effective. And I don't know whether or not they had the title counselor in the film, but how they interact with their clients is pretty reflective of what we teach in our program and what we promote in professional counseling.
Minus the unethical stuff.
Minus choking your client and things like that. But in terms of the authenticity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so I think that this will conclude our first introductory episode of mental illness and pop culture.